have to pursue something that you're passionate about. And you also, because of the materialistic world, have to find a way to earn enough to live a comfortable life by doing what you love. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Welcome to Hot Coffee Cold Beer. I'm your host, Brock Hendricks, with the LA Lakers, Clippers, and Kings. On this podcast, we'll sit down and share a hot coffee or a cold beer with those who have made a name for themselves working inside the highly competitive sports industry. All the content heard today is solely reflective of the independent reporting by Hot Coffee Cold Beer and our team and does not reflect the opinion or feelings of AEG, Staples Center, the LA Lakers, Clippers, Kings, or Sparks. Today's guest is an industry-leading expert on the NBA salary cap and lead writer for the Lakers on Bleacher Report, Eric Pincus. Eric has been covering the NBA for the past 18 years for Hoops World, Basketball Insiders, and now with Bleacher Report. Eric teaches about the NBA salary cap and basketball operations, streaming on YouTube, and is also an instructor at the Sports Business Classroom. You'll hear about how getting audited as a chief information officer at an events company helped Eric prepare for reading the NBA's collective bargaining agreement and the complicated world of NBA player contract rules. Eric, it's really nice to talk to an NBA salary cap expert. How are you today?
Enjoying life, getting ready for the season. It's a good time.
It's crazy. It's already here. Yeah, but do you have a hot coffee or a cold beer with us ready to go?
A little bit of coffee. We'll take a sip right now. Good morning.
That's great. Great audio radio there. I appreciate it. The NBA salary cap, in the past, I've joked that it is more complex than quantum physics. So I have a feeling that you'll provide some relief, like our sponsor of CBD, Papa and Barkley, in this episode. So here's what I really love about your sports journey. You've been writing in the NBA since about 2002, and you've had this career simultaneously where you were working for a company called Bob Gale Enterprises. You were their chief information officer. So to me, it's like you're living this double life where on one side of your life, you're a C-level executive. And in the other side, you're pursuing a writing career. How do you balance that life?
It was a lot of work and a lot of respect and appreciation to my wife for making it all work. We have three kids and three daughters. And so it's been an interesting road. I started when I was really young in business in an event company, which was founded by my parents. And starting in about fifth grade, I started reconciling the bank accounts of the company. And my grandfather was the accountant. And so he taught me accounting. So I would do all the books and gradually learned how to write software and build out networks. I did all their IT and did a lot of the legal stuff. And this is something I did for almost my entire life.
I love your story of basically falling into sports like most people do on the team side. We hear a lot of stories about, you know, and mine is this way as well, where I didn't know the sports industry existed, really. I just thought it was a group of consumers and I just watched the NBA because I was a fan. I had no idea until I got into this that this is something you can make your life out of. So it's funny to hear that you have that same kind of story. How old are you when you're doing accounting for the family business?
That's a good question. I know that I started in fifth grade with the bank reconciliations. And I mean, I had to have been high school age when I was learning that. I don't know at what point I took over completely, but there was a point where I would just do all the books and it would give it to my grandfather. And at some point he was aging and, you know, eventually he passed away, but at some point he couldn't really do it anymore. And we still had an accountant, but I would do everything up to filling out the returns. And then we actually got audited one year by the IRS just because they do that sort of thing. And I had to go through an audit process, which was excruciatingly difficult. We had great records, but it doesn't matter like how great your records are. This was digital, but it wasn't quite as digital as it is now. It'd probably be easier now to do this, but maybe like this was like 7-8 years ago where not everything was like electronically saved in the same way. And you know, we got through the audit with great results. We had like over 90% of what we were supposed to have. And you know, whatever they dinged us on was like nothing, you know, there was no money that we had to pay extra, but it was a great education to see how that works and see how the government works in this. And the level of detail in that part of my job translates 100% to what I do now in writing up salary sheets for teams, tracking every transaction and understanding what parameters, what's legal. All that stuff is the same, different animal, same beast or something like that. Probably butchering the quote, but something along those lines.
But it is a perfect preparation for reading an NBA's collective bargaining agreement, if you think about it. Like, getting audited, I don't wish that on my worst enemy, but it actually prepared you for where you are today.
For sure, sure.
And I also just want to see what the IRS would say if you get audited and you go, well, a fifth grader is doing our books. So
they reached out to my father and he tried to explain and answer all their questions. And the reality is like, he was great at what he did, but he had no idea what he was talking about. And they were all like, this company doesn't know what they're doing. Then they talked to me and I explained everything. And they're like, oh, but we still had to back everything up. And I literally like printed out the tax code for an S corporation and like went through and read everything. And it's not easy reading, and the CBA is not easy reading, but you don't start with like page one. I tutor people, I tutor students, I've tutored agents, and I've actually tutored people who work for teams. One of my students just got a job with one of the teams in their basketball operations department. And, you know, I say you don't start at like page one and just read the document. You start on a topic and you find that topic and you study that topic. Like, I had to just do some brushing up on the over 38 rule, where I know it, but I don't have a lot of experience in applying it. The last time I had to look at it closely was when the Rockets tried to sign Nene to an illegal contract some years back, around 2017, maybe, or 16, where it was just, they messed up the over 38 rule. And so LeBron signing what he just signed with the Lakers, the over 38 rule impacted how long he could sign for. So he only really added on one additional year. He had 1 year, he had a player option. And so that year is happening instead of being an option. And then there's one additional year. Had he wanted to keep going, couldn't. And so just like right now, I looked at the CBA, read it closely, make sure I understand it, make sure that I'm not missing it. Then I reach out to contacts that I have to make sure that my interpretation is accurate, because that's the other thing, is that the written word itself is ambiguous.
What I think is the most fascinating rule in the league CBA is the over 38 rule. Can you give our listeners like a 101 of what that is?
So by October 1st, if you're over 38 before that season, at any point in your contract, then they're looking at those fourth and fifth years as possibly years you may never play. And they want to make sure that teams don't abuse this rule. So what the Lakers might be doing theoretically with Marc Gasol isn't really ideal. It's a little bit of dancing around the rules, and the NBA is kind of understanding like they can only do so much. But if a team is going overboard 4 or 5 years, that's when they step in.
So the rule is basically, if a player it hits the age of 38 during their contract year, you can defer payments. Am I understanding that correctly?
If they hit 38 before the start of any of their seasons, the fourth and fifth, those final years are considered deferred compensation. So the idea is, they're going to take that money in the fourth year and the fifth year and say, those aren't really applying to those years. They're going to apply to the first 3 years. And so they average out that money over those years. And I might have gotten a minor detail wrong. I mean, I'm not looking at it, but it's such a complicated document that I try not to rely entirely on memory. I've been doing this. Some people will call me an expert, whether I am or not. I still don't rely on my own memory. Let's use LeBron as the example, right? So let's just say $40 million is what he's making each year, and that's the most he can make. Those are not the exact numbers. Let's say it's 4 years, $40 million. That last year would be past that 38 rule. And so they would take that extra $40 million, and they would average it into the other few.
You're starting to bleed into this a little bit, but so now let's really dive into the NBA salary cap. I've worked for three NBA teams. I've followed basketball more religiously than Catholicism for about 20 years, and I have very little understanding of how the cap works. There's just so much to go here. It does feel like the American tax code, to your point, because there's minimum contracts, there's maximum contracts, there's different rules for different kinds of free agents. The NBA is not like the NHL or the NFL, where you get a hard number in those leagues that say you can spend up to this number, and that's it. I believe the NHL is somewhere around $81 million. In the NFL, it's somewhere around $190 million. And once you hit that number, that's it. You're done. That's the number you have to work with. In the NBA, you get about $130 million, but teams just blow way over. Like right now, the Brooklyn Nets are $42 million over that cap. The Warriors are $60 million over that cap. Can you give our listeners a real NBA salary cap 101 of what are the rules for going over the salary cap? When is it okay? When is it not okay?
The simple idea is that the NBA has a soft cap, and a soft cap means that there is no spending limit per se. But there are instances relatively new to the industry from, I think, 2011, where a hard cap can be triggered. And in the case this year, the Lakers have triggered that hard cap. So by a hard cap, they have, I guess what you'd be say, similar to the NFL, and I'm not as well versed in the other sports, but the hard cap right now is 138.9, so 139 million roughly. So no matter what, period, cannot spend over that. But that's rare, although it's not entirely rare. Depending on the year, more and more teams will do a hard cap. It just depends on where we're at in the life cycle of the team. When you have a soft cap, it's very different, but you only have so many tools to spend. So let's say that you want to be a team that goes under the salary cap. That's when you have, I don't want to say a limit, because even that isn't limited, right? If you're 30 million under the cap, you could spend 30 million to bring a player. And now that you're at the cap, you get another exception. An exception is something that allows you to spend over the cap of another roughly $5 million. So for the teams that are under, they can go over, and then you could always go over by minimum contracts. So there's no hard, well, if there's a hard cap, no matter what, you can't go over that. So for the teams with the soft cap, they can always do minimum contracts. You can always trade, and those trades might add salaries. So, and then there's something called rights, probably heard of bird rights. They're named after Larry Bird, although the CBA doesn't use the word bird rights anywhere. Colloquially, that's what we use. When you have a player's rights, there's a formula, a number of formulas that determine how much of your space they take up. Those rights have a cost. For someone like Markieff Morris, who was basically on a minimum more or less last year, not quite, or Dwight Howard's a better example. He was on a minimum. Dwight took up just 1.6 million of their cap space, which is almost nothing. If they wanted his rights, they could pay him up to a certain point. There's different level of rights. There's non-bird, early bird, full bird. But someone like Anthony Davis, who they had their full rights, the full bird rights, basically his salary that he just signed for, that's how much he took up unsigned via his rights. So in the case of some players use the rights to overpay, that worked out well for the Spurs some years back. Kind of worked out well with Kawhi, where he had a low cap hold for his rights. And so they were able to wait, sign LaMarcus Aldridge, and then after, even though Kawhi, let's say he took up, I'm making up a number, let's say it was $10 million. They had to save $10 million for Kawhi. And then if you're going to pay him $20 million, you're saving, you have an extra $10 million, and then after you can sign Kawhi. Now, ultimately, it didn't work out for them because I don't think Kawhi liked that and ended up leaving. And I think we saw with Miami, they could have done the same thing with Bam Adebayo to try to chase someone like Giannis. But Bam and Giannis share an agent. I don't know that this happened, but I could pretty much tell you, in my opinion, that this happened, that they said, if you want any shot at Giannis, we're not saying you're getting him, but if you want any shot, you better pay Bam now. Maybe that happened. I don't know. I'm making it up, but I think it happened, and I could be wrong. I could be way wrong. That's my opinion.
Bird rights are when you could go over the salary cap to keep a player on your own team. And bird rights happen when a player, if they don't get waived for 3 consecutive years, is that right?
Kind of.
See how complicated this is? Like, that's how I read the rule, and you most, go, kind of.
Right. Well, most rules are kind of. Like, most of them have, if it was really simple, it would be just a rule. But there's always, like, just like you asked about the over 38, well, there is a condition by which LeBron could have signed longer where there's, you know, a pathway through that rule. If you sign a player for 1 year and waive them, and then the next year you sign them and they finish the season, you go by when they finish the season, they have been with the team for 2 years, 2 contracts. So the rights actually at that point are early bird. And this is something years and years ago when I first really started on this journey, I took your interpretation. And if you read the CBA, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying. I explained to somebody with a team why they wouldn't have the rights to this player. And then they said, no, that's not accurate. Da, da, da. And we argued about it. And by arguing about it, we built up a relationship. Now I have a resource where I could bounce stuff off of. And people who work for teams don't necessarily have a lot of people they can talk to about these sort of things. If you're a fan of basketball, you love to talk about basketball. And if you see the world through this particular prism, you can't have these conversations with everybody. So there's a camaraderie, perhaps, with people who can have these kind of conversations. Even if you sign someone for like a 10-day and then the next year, for instance, the Lakers waived DeMarcus Cousins last year, midway through the season. Had they signed him this year for 1 year, at the end, they would have had early bird. So there's non-bird after 1 year. You can give a raise of up to 120%. There's early bird, where you can give a raise of either up to 175%, or a specific number that the league gives out every year, which in this case is about $10 million this year, a little bit more, 10.1. Alex Caruso, for instance, last year was an early bird free agent. So they could have paid him last year up to about, what was it, about I forget, it was maybe 9 or something like that. I'd have to look. And then there's the full bird. And when you're full bird, you can pay that player up to the max. And so this kind of gets to your original question, which is like, how do teams get to where like Nets are and the Warriors? You know, in the case of the Warriors, they had rights to Steph Curry. At the time, he wasn't that highly paid. His first big contract was much smaller than the max because he'd had some ankle injuries, foot injuries, and they just lucked out. So they had his rights, and then they acquired all these other players, and then they were able to give Steph like 40-something million because they had his
rights. Because of the birds. Okay.
Right. So they were able to suddenly take someone if someone's at 15 or 10 or not looking at it and pay him 40 or 35 or whatever it was at the time, there's a $20 million jump or whatever. And there's a lot more that went into what happened with the Warriors beyond, you know, the cap rose to a massive spike and all that. I did a live stream on the Lakers trying to process what the AD and LeBron extensions meant. And towards the end of the stream, we went through and plugged in like, okay, what if the Lakers just extend Dennis Schroeder because they have his rights? What if they give an extension to Kuzma? They have his rights. They're over the cap. They can pay him, both of them, up to the max. What if they pay Markieff Morris? They can pay him up to about that $10 million with early bird. Maybe it'll be 11 next year. What if they're paying Alex Caruso? What if they're paying, you know, you start adding it up and you pay everybody. And very quickly, the number got so high that with the luxury tax, it was in the 300-something million dollar range. And so then I was like, okay, this isn't practical. So let's cut off a couple million from here and here. And, you know, maybe Markieff can't come back. And so they bring back a minimum guy. And, you know, I just made up like, and very quickly, I saved them $100 million just in tax. It is a complex thing. There are very different rules for teams. You know, and just to wrap up this point, it's like when you total up what a team has, there's the total to figure out how much they have to reach the floor, which is the minimum that teams have to spend. There's another total to figure out how much cap room they have. There's another total to figure out what their luxury tax bill would be. And then there's another total to determine what their hard cap number would be. In the case of the Lakers, Dennis Schroeder has incentives. So just because he has incentives, that just that possibility that exists that he could make more means they have to count that money towards that apron because you can't spend more than the hard cap. So if his number is 16 on the books, his number for that total is 17 and a half. So tracking all of that, as you can imagine, is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It sounds like you have to have been doing accounting since the fifth grade to be able to keep track of those things. FYI to our listeners, if you aren't paying attention, like if you aren't watching Eric's live streams on Twitch, I think it is, when he goes through these on YouTube, you got to get involved. It's fascinating stuff because in real time, there's all these answers that I have that I have to build up a whole podcast about, you get in real time. So it's fascinating. Season 1 of Hot Coffee Cold Beer is winding down. After episode 30, we'll take a break and see you again in the year 2021. If you enjoy our show, please follow Hot Coffee Cold Beer on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to stay in the loop of what's happening in sports business and to be alerted on new episodes coming back in season 2. We're posting weekly unique stories about the depths of what's happening beyond sports news that will continue through the season 1 break. We appreciate you, the listeners, for sharing a hot coffee and cold beer with us. Our show would not be possible without the support you have shown us through the first 30 episodes. Hot Coffee, Cold Beer, and our team are excited to continue sharing the stories of the sports industry. And now, back to the show. There's a couple things we want to ask you about of how these exact rules work. There's one interesting thing that happens in the NBA that's kind of resurged during free agency, where teams try to manipulate the cap by doing something called a sign-and-trade. So instead of signing a player to a contract outright, essentially, they re-sign with their old team at a higher number and then complete a trade. We just saw this with Kevin Durant. While he's playing for the Golden State Warriors, he decides that he wants to go play for the Brooklyn Nets. Instead of signing a contract with the Brooklyn Nets, he agrees to sign a new contract with Golden State and let Golden State trade him to Brooklyn. Now Golden State gets actually something for losing him. Can you explain how the sign and trade works? Like, why do they opt for this instead of just signing with Brooklyn?
It isn't a new concept, but it has resurged in the last few years. Last year was like record breaking in how many sign and trades we have. In years ago, before 2011, in the previous CBA versions, you could pay that player like you were re-signing your own free agent. So when a player re-signs, they can get 8% raises. They go sign with another team, they can get 5% raises. If you sign with your own team, you can sign for up to 5 years. If you sign with another team, the max would be 4 years. So in years ago past, someone like LeBron left Cleveland for Miami. And it made sense for him to do a sign-and-trade because he could get more higher raise and technically more years. And so that was something that it was beneficial for the player to do. At some point, the league decided and the players agreed in their negotiation to change that rule, to take away that advantage. So years ago, the answer was it gave the player a chance to make more money. There was always an advantage to stay with your exact team financially. So if you took that advantage and went somewhere else and they were willing to participate, it could be mutually beneficial. But that's gone away since 2011. Now, the most you can get is as if you were signing with that team. So where's the incentive?
How every rule seems to have a couple of different rules within it, or exceptions, or basically there's a if this, then so with every rule. How can you expect 30 people in America to be NBA salary cap experts? Because that's how many GM jobs there are. So do you see teams that will either freelance someone like you to be their kind of consultant and bounce ideas off of? Or do NBA teams and GMs have their own experts kind of in-house to know where their job is to know every single one of these rules?
Every team has a different philosophy. There are like 30 little kingdoms within the NBA that operate by their own set of principles. And some have the general manager as the top guy. Some have presidents of basketball operations and have a general manager. Some would be the coach, like Doc Rivers, Stan Van Gundy, Tom Thibodeau, where the coach would be the GM, which is, in my opinion, a terrible idea because of how hard it is to be a coach as far as time. To then also make those decisions, it's really too much for one person. Plus, there are counter priorities in that a coach wants to win now and a GM has to have a 3 to 4 to 5 year outlook. Some teams do it by committee. They won't have a capologist or a cap expert. They'll have people who are in their analytics or just know basketball, and some are attorneys. The Lakers in the old days used to have attorneys who worked for them, who weren't really like basketball operations employees. They were a law firm that they would consult. I don't think consult is even the right word, but retain and use. You know, each team should in some level have someone like myself. There are a lot of people that I know who can understand this. It is a lot. It is learnable. I teach it. Some students come and it's a long slog and they have a lot of trouble and it takes a long time. And some come in and they know it and they get it. And there's always caveats, but there are great resources.
I like the idea of you using this as almost an audition to be an AGM, be someone's assistant or someone's salary cap expert. Like, look, this is everything I know. I think it's fascinating. I would enroll in a class, an NBA salary cap class taught by you in a heartbeat. So it's cool that actually exists. One other rule we wanted to ask you about, what's the deal with NBA players having partially guaranteed contracts and two-way contracts? Because I was under the assumption that every dollar in the NBA contract was guaranteed.
That is not the case initially. So when you sign someone to a contract, you have multiple exhibits. One of the exhibits indicates obviously the salary and then how much of that is protected. So there's protected compensation, which means guaranteed basically. That number can be a variable. There are rules about how that can work, and you can't, without getting into every little detail, there's a lot of detail. But contracts don't need to be guaranteed up until a certain point. So under a normal situation, in the normal timing, it's January the 10th, but you have to be waived by January 7th by 5 p.m. Eastern time to clear waivers by the 10th. I think unless it's over a weekend and you might get an extra day. But the idea is after that point, all contracts guarantee for the rest of the season. I think it's January 15th for two ways. So two-way contracts are a totally different animal.
There's about 200 more questions, I think, that have surfaced about how this rule works or how this works. So we don't have time to dive into all of it, but appreciate you kind of sharing with us the knowledge and whatnot. You've clearly proven to be an NBA salary cap expert, but I'm in awe of how much you know. But my next question is how. How do you actually train yourself to be a salary cap expert?
The starting point is looking up on Larry Kuhn's FAQ. He's been doing this for about 20 plus years, relatively as long as I've been doing what I do. And we hooked up a couple decades ago and became good friends and colleagues, and much love for Larry. But it's dense reading. You almost need like cliff notes to his cliff notes. It's like, it is still a lot. It is not light reading in and of itself. The entry level is start there. look at what I publish on Basketball Insiders, read the pages, look at the salaries, and then look at the transactions. I'm way behind, by the way, because of the deluge that we've had in the last 2 weeks. But everything will be up to date within a week. And then look at the transaction logs and try to put the numbers in an Excel sheet or whatever and try to break it down and see if you can make sense of it. And then reach out to people like myself. Take these classes. Go to Sports Business Classroom. Sign up for my Patreon. I'll give you access to my Discord. And that's just at Eric Pincus. And the idea is that you can ask me those questions. And on the Discord, I'm trying to answer on Twitter as much as I can when people hit me up with questions. But as things are happening and there's big news coming down, there'll be hundreds of replies that I can't possibly see all of them or most of them. Whereas when it's quiet on Twitter and it's like, you know, 11 at night, 2 in the morning, and I see a tweet, I can respond easily. That's not how it. So if you really want access to me, that's one of the ways to get it. And so I can help. Otherwise, like where people are a little bit more advanced, I say, like, look at a trade and break down, like run the trade map. That's something I tell to people who work in for teams who aren't on the salary cap side as much as they'd like to be. And they're like, how do I improve at that? I'm like, well, here's the trade breakdown. Let's walk through it. This is something I would, you know, in a lesson. And it's, yes, it's doing the math, but it's also, it's not just here's the math. Understand like the reason, like how does it work? And see how the league breaks it down into microtransactions.
We've got two guys who are under the height of 5'9" talking about how we've made careers in sports. So I just think that's super cool. I think you are super cool, man. We'll let you get back to the world of circumnavigating these gymnastics in a second. We have some quick hitters for you, some personal questions. A lot of it's goofy sports opinions and whatnot. Just answer your first instinct, rapid fire, to end the show whenever you're ready.
All right.
All right. Eric Pincus, quick hitters. Here we go. What is one stereotype about writers that is just not true?
That they don't know the game. I mean, you don't know what the writer's history is playing the sport. Admittedly, I did not play basketball at a high school level growing up. So I'm not a great example of that, but I know a lot of writers who played a lot of basketball and know a lot about the game and aren't just eggheads and whatever you're going to say.
Who is your favorite LA Laker of all time?
That's impossible. I mean, I grew up in LA because of the emotional journey and having been around him firsthand and losing him this year. It's got to be Kobe. If we had to take away Kobe, I mean, I grew up watching Nick Van Exel, so that was kind of like my entry point into, I was young enough to watch Magic and all that, and I loved all that. But like as a young adult, like Van Exel was that. So, and I got, that was like one of the only players that I've met that I was like, holy crap, that's, I don't get starstruck, but when I saw Nick Van Exel in the locker room, I was like, man, that's Nick Van Exel.
And how many LA Lakers of the past have a reference in a Jay-Z song? Just Nick Van Exel, I think. So
are there any LeBron references? There's got to be a LeBron reference.
I feel like there's got to be LeBron. There's got to be Kobe reference in there somewhere, but that's the only one I can think of at the time.
That's fair.
Who is your favorite LA Clipper of all time?
When it comes to the locker room of doing my job of interviewing, I had the most fun interviewing guys like Chris Kaman who were just out of the box. I would say another favorite on that side would be a Laker, would be Metta World Peace Ron Artest. As far as like personal relationships, he'd be among my favorite Lakers, just favorite people. But I think just being around Sean Livingston and I was there when he tore out his knee, which was, you know, extremely traumatic. And to see him recover and try and fail and try and fail and then finally get back and then win championships with the Warriors was one of my favorite experiences of being around. Very sweet human being.
Who is your favorite female athlete of all time?
Well, obviously my girls. So, you know, I can't stray from that. I mean, I love what Sue Bird has done for the game, for the WNBA game. I watched Lisa Leslie win her first title at Staples Center with the Sparks. My wife and I were there for that.
The NBA season's starting soon. We got a quick turnaround. What are your overall thoughts on like the moves that the Lakers and Clippers both made?
I mean, the Lakers got better. The Clippers at this point have to prove that they're better. I don't think they've gotten better. I think they got a little bit worse. You know, Serge Ibaka is a nice get, but they lost Jermichael. They lost Montrez. And I think Clipper fans had a love-hate thing with Montrez. A lot of what went wrong with the Clippers was placed by the fans on Montrez's head because he didn't play well in the playoffs. But it was a much deeper issue as to what didn't go right with the Clippers that go way beyond Montrez Harrell.
It's definitely a subjective topic, but maybe I'm too close to the action being a Lakers and a Clippers employee. I think they're still the best two teams in the league. I know the Clippers made some different moves. I'm not worried about them. I think the Clippers are going to compete just as well. Like, in my opinion, I think the Clippers got better. It's a little bit of a roster reconstruction, but I'm just jacked to see what this Clipper team does, honestly.
they need another playmaker. To me, that is making it so that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have to be, and Lou Williams have to be creators, is problematic, especially Lou Williams as their primary ball handling creator because of his height and size. It is a lot harder. It's easier to do what he does regular season. When you go up against playoff defenses and you're that size, it's harder for Chris Paul. He struggled at times to advance far in the playoffs because it's hard to be a 6 foot playing, a 6 foot guard and survive and thrive with what works regular season in the playoff because teams can scheme against it. And as great as Lou Williams is, he's not as good, in my opinion anyway, as Chris Paul. Probably a better scorer than Chris Paul, straight up scorer. But so that floor general that LeBron is, Clippers don't have. And they didn't even have a Rondo last year. So that's why they looked at Rondo and he didn't end up coming. But that's the one piece. And I'm not saying they won't get it. They may have that opportunity to get it along the way. But Patrick Beverley is a good defender. He's not a true point guard. Lou is a great scorer, not a true point guard. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, great scorers, great wings, amazing players, but not LeBron-level creators. That's the hardest part in the playoffs is you've got the best minds in the business having days and days to game plan in the coaching staffs in the NBA, and they have tremendous resources to counter what you're doing. And so how do you score in the playoffs? That is the hardest thing. And we saw that the Clippers struggled, and it's because they didn't have that one thing. That is something that I don't think was addressed yet. So that doesn't mean it won't be addressed, but that's the missing piece that makes me feel like, yeah, the rest of the teams in the West, maybe they're third. You know, we could debate Denver. We could debate all these other teams. Clippers are right there. But I do have the gap between the Lakers and Clippers expanding towards the Lakers way, growing with what they've done versus what the Clippers have done. But again, it's subjective.
And the last one we have for you, when your kids are of age listening to this episode, what do you hope they take out of your story?
I mean, you just have to pursue something that you're passionate about. And you also, because of the materialistic world, have to find a way to earn enough to live a comfortable life by doing what you love. And that's not an easy thing to do, but it is doable. You'll get a lot of no's and a lot of obstacles along the way that will actively try to prevent you from doing what you're trying to achieve. And you have to find a way through it. And that's all there is to it. And with that kind of perseverance, you just have to have the confidence and your skill set in whatever it is that you're doing, whatever you're passionate about, to build up enough confidence in that so that ultimately you're unstoppable.
Eric, I really appreciate you coming through and breaking this topic open for us. This has been really cool to hear about your story and whatnot. How can people get in touch with you? I know you're big in the Twitter game, big in the streaming game. Where can people find you?
Well, I'm definitely, I guess, big in the Twitter game, and that's something I've been using for a very long time. I'm at Eric Pincus, ERICPINCUS. The streaming game is new. I've been doing it for maybe 5-6 weeks, and you know, 1 or 2 a week at most. I'm still trying to figure out how that's going to fit in my life. Right now, we're trying to deal with all the contracts coming in. Time is of the essence right now. But you can find my latest stream always pinned to the top of my Twitter profile, and that'll just be on YouTube. Also, you can find my work at Bleacher Report and Basketball Insiders. Basketball Insiders is where I publish each team's cap sheet, although I am as far behind as I have ever been just because of the nature of the dense free agent period. But that will be resolved within a matter of time.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Eric. Appreciate you.
All right. Anytime. Thanks, Rob.
Today's episode of Hot Coffee Cold Beer is independently produced by Brock L. Hendricks. The content you heard today does not reflect the opinion or views of AEG, Staples Center, the Los Angeles Lakers, Clippers, Kings, or Sparks, or any of its affiliates, subsidiaries, and partners.